Hey, it's Dolla White, and this is the Dolla White Podcast. My guest today is Reverend Jeff Obafemi-Carr, the founder and chief spiritual officer of the Infinity Fellowship, which is the fastest-growing, independent, interspiritual, ancient wisdom-based community in the United States. And if you don't know what the fuck that means, that's the whole point. He's going to explain it. Welcome to the Dolla White Podcast.
Pull up, get it. Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolla White Podcast.
All right, welcome in. Episode 4 of the Dolla White Podcast. My guest today, Reverend Jeff Obafemi-Carr, the founder and chief spiritual officer of the Infinity Fellowship. Rev Jeff, thank you for doing this.
It's a pleasure to be here in the vibrational energy of you, Brother Dolla White, all that you do to reach people and talk to people and engage people in the exciting and unique way that only you can. I'm honored to be here and happy to be able to chat with you for a few.
Definitely appreciate that. I wanted to talk to you today because you know a lot about a lot of different religions. Like, that's one of your strong points, is knowing a lot about a different religions. We'll get to what you do at Infinity Fellowship, but I thought a good point to start this conversation is I wanted to kind of tell you where I come from religiously and spiritually, right? Sure. So I grew up Catholic, and I think the entire time that I grew up Catholic, I had a lot of like doubts, like, I don't know if this is really for me. But you know as well as I do, living in the South, that religion is a serious thing, and family and friends and everything else, that if you start having those doubts and those thoughts in your mind, it's a scary thing to come out and say, hey, I don't know if I really believe this within your community, right? So it took me a long time to really come to terms with the fact that maybe this isn't really for me. There are a lot of different factors played into that. I think there are a lot of downsides to organized religion. I think there are a lot of upsides to organized religion. But at the end of the day, I'd probably consider myself agnostic. I don't care what anybody else believes. I don't know what happens after I die. I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Like, that sits well with me, not being able to know that I'm all right. Having said that, I think what's really interesting about what you do at Infinity Fellowship is you take kind of the things that I didn't really care for about religion, a lot of the hypocrisies, if you don't believe this, you're going here, this is going to happen to you. But you also combine it with a lot of the good stuff that I did enjoy, the sense of community, the community outreach. So talk a little bit about that, about exactly what the Infinity Fellowship is.
Sure, man. And again, I want to let you know, first and foremost, you're not alone. And a lot of people who will watch the podcast or who will tune into you on the radio, they're in the same boat. I was in the same boat too, as a person who was raised in the tradition of the Baptist church.
Right.
And then in college, started studying different religions and just finding that I was seeing beyond what I was told to believe. And I was studying more and I wanted to know more. So studying more about Islam, studying more about Buddhism, studying more about Ifa, which people call the Yoruba religion, and talking about the Orishas and Kemetic or ancient Egyptian, ancient wisdom traditions. All of that led me into the same space where I was like, I'm going to be agnostic for a while.
Right.
I've been initiated into the ancient Egyptian priesthood. I've been ordained as a Baptist minister. So I had walked in a very immersive way on these spiritual paths. But yet I felt like I was being forced to take sides.
Right.
So, and that's one of the things that religion does. It forces you to take sides, to say, I'm right, or we're right as a group, and everyone else is wrong. And that's the systemic space of religion. And that's one of the things that people struggle with. I find it fascinating that now among millennials and younger people, they are moving from the space of religiosity and into the space of spirituality. And it's not such a strange thing anymore. When I was coming
early 90s,
it was strange to start.
Yeah.
You know, church, man, I don't know. There's some things I don't necessarily agree with, but I can't break ranks here. So we've seen numbers from the Pew Research Institute that they're up from 7% of people who identify as spiritual, more religious, up to about 17%.
Wow.
And that's the fastest growing category with young people and millennials, because now you have more access to information and you do what works for you. So when I found that I didn't fit in any one space, I had the credentials to launch a space And for the longest time, I fought against it because I didn't want to be anybody's spiritual leader. I was content to being in a community or finding a community where I could follow. When I was in church or in other religious spaces, I was the best follower, best volunteer, best supporter that you could ever, ever want. And I wanted the same thing here. Unfortunately, there was not a space in Nashville that brought people together around the general concepts. When you look and you study religions, you see that they have more in common than they have in difference.
Right.
And I believe it was the great poet Rumi who said, truth was like a mirror in the hands of God. It fell and shattered, and each of us grabbed a piece and thought that they had the whole. So that's what religion often represents. It represents each one of us, each cultural group, each nationality, each country, each region of the world, trying to define God in its own terms, but thinking that it has the whole, when the reality is it only has a piece. So in 2014, we started the Infinity Fellowship and finally said, you know what? We're going to deal with how the mirror fits together. All of the things that we love about community, community service, community action, spirituality, spiritual growth, responsibility, community, we're going to put that in there. And then all the stuff that we didn't like, including the judgment, your condemnation, the anger, the you're going to burn in hell forever kind of stuff, we just left that off the table.
Right.
So it was a unique concept in 2014. We started with basically three people who got the concept in a little actor studio. And now 6 years later, we call ourselves the fastest growing, independent, interspiritual, ancient wisdom based community in the United States. We also call ourselves the only independent.
Right.
Spiritual, ancient, wisdom-based community.
You touched on something that I found very interesting. That was one of my kind of breaking points with religion when I just thought about it in a rational sense. I thought one day, I was born in Lakewood, New Jersey, moved to Atlanta when I was young, but I was born in the United States, which basically put me at, what, a 70% chance that I'm going to be Christian. I don't know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's
80%. Yeah.
Right. And then you think, I could have been born in the Middle East, you know, and I probably would have been Muslim. Or could have been born in India, and my probability would have been Hindu. And I'm like, geography determines a large part of what religion you follow. And just that thought process that because I was born here, I am thinking the right way, and therefore I will go to heaven because I was just introduced to this one religion, seemed kind of crazy to me. Like, are all these other people going to hell? Just, they can't help that where they were born, right?
And well, you know, let's look, if we're going to talk about historical origins, antecedents, and where religion come from. Definitely, religion tends to be the deification of a people's culture. So that basically means that you look at God. There's an old saying that in the beginning, God created human beings, and ever since then, we've been trying to return the favor. So, like you said, if you're in India or in the Indus Kush Valley, you're going to be drawn to the Hindu system or the Buddhist system. If you're in Southeast Asia, if you're in Africa, if you're in West Africa, you're going to be drawn toward the Ifa system. If you're in the islands, you're going to be drawn to the Lukumi or the Nago or Santeria. So basically, wherever you are, you develop your own interpretation of who and what God is. I used to struggle with that myself when I was in church because I say, you know what, we've been doing this church thing effectively, if you want to say it's effective, we've been doing that for a little under 2,000 years. But we have human history where we're looking at pyramids that are 10,000 years old. We're looking at religions that are 20 and 30 and 40,000 years old. Does that mean all of those people with all of those great accomplishments, with all of those wonderful spiritual systems and complex ways of seeing the world and the universe, does that mean they're suddenly wrong because of something that was constructed in the right now, only recently in human history? And it doesn't mean that they're wrong. It means that all things fit together. And the more you go back and study the origins of the religions, the more that you see things fit together. I was thinking of a way to explain it in what we do with Infinity, and I was thinking of the sun, right? So I was drawing this on a piece of paper, and I think about if you got the center of the sun here, and these represent the sun's rays, right? When you get the sun's rays out here, sun is an interesting concept because most religions started with trying to figure out what the sun was. You know, here's this wonderful light that comes up in the east in the morning, it sets in the west, and then it makes room for the stars and the moons. There's so many sciences and spiritual practices that came out of studying the stars. So we have this understanding that this ray right here might be Christianity. This ray right here might be Islam. This ray right here might be Judaism or whatever religion it might be. And each one of those rays, the farther out you get, the more separate they seem. But when you study their origins and you start to trace it toward the center, you see that they all emanate from the same concepts. And when I study world religions, I say, you know what? Generally, they all agree that human beings are made in the image and likeness of the creator, that we have within us all of the elements of the universe. That's both scientific and spiritual. So when you talk about the sun, you can sit on the side of a hill. I guarantee you right now, I could sit on the side of a hill in a sunrise with a Muslim, with a Christian, with somebody who's Jewish, with somebody who may be a Hindu. And I can say, isn't the sun beautiful? And they would say, oh, it's so awesome. Well, what does the sun do? Well, the sun brings fructifying heat to the crops. Yeah. Oh, the sun gives us vitamin D. Oh, yeah, that's great. Oh, the sun makes it so that our mood is enhanced and we feel good. Yeah, man. Oh, the sun, it grows the trees and it gives us light. Yes, it does. It gives us warmth during the day, even on a chilly day. Oh, yes, yes, yes. We're all in agreement about the wonderful properties of the sun. Then I ask the dangerous question. Who made the sun? Allah made the sun. No, Allah didn't make the sun. It was Jesus. No, it wasn't Jesus. It was Krishna. No, it wasn't Krishna. It was Amun. No, it wasn't. It was Olodumare. All of a sudden, people who were in agreement about the principles of the sun are now fighting each other over the names. And when we begin to fight over the names, we find that's where division comes from. When we focus on the essence, that's where unity comes from. Man, I'll tell you, I went to Tennessee State. And in the cafeteria, man, you can witness some fights. And I remember seeing almost a fight. I was sitting at a table where a cat came in with a cup. He got in a Coca-Cola, put it in a cup, and set it on the table. And he said, oh, man, there's a pop machine working. He said, pop? Man, it's a cold drink. And somebody else said, no, man, it's a soda. And somebody else, no, man, it's a soda pop. So we had pop, soda, and cold drink. I'm from country, we say cold drink. And people got in this argument over what it was called. And finally, I said, guys, look, listen, does it change the essence of what's inside the cup? Because what you're arguing over is based on the perspective of where you're from. But the cup and what's inside the cup is not arguing over those things. It's just sitting there waiting to be consumed. So it goes with spirit, with essence, with God. And at infinity, we say the God of your personal acceptance and understanding. So by not defining that for you, we just give you spiritual practices that are going to help you get in touch with it.
You touched on history, and I speak more about Christianity, obviously, because I know more about Christianity because I grew up here and I haven't studied any other religion. So if you're listening right now and you're Christian, don't think I'm picking on you. What I'm familiar with, right? It's always strange to me that people will know scripture like the back of their hand, but won't know the history behind where the book came from. There are books missing. There are, you know what I mean? Like there are all of these different elements that went into making that one book. They'll know what's in the book, but they don't know how that book got here. That was always troubling for me as well, was how do you not look into this?
Well, it's not required.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, one thing that I learned when I was fully entrenched in traditional church was that it's not required to learn, to study, to understand. It's required to believe. That's why you have this language that happens with religions. Believers, non-believers. Believers, we're good. Non-believers are bad. Our job as believers is to convince the non-believers so that we can save them. Never mind that I'm not paying attention to my own personal life. Things might be falling apart for me. I have this burden to bring those non-believers into a space of belief. Now let's talk about what belief is. What does the word belief mean? A belief is something that exists in absence of provable fact. So if you can't prove something, you just believe in it. We've had a wonderful election cycle, record number of people that turned out. We still have division going on, people questioning whether or not the President 45 is going to give up the power. We have all of this going on. I say this to say that you can factually put on paper all of the illegalities, all of the bad things that recent president has done, and people who believe in him will say, I don't care about the facts. I believe in him. He represents me. And once somebody accepts a belief, which exists in absence of provable fact, it's hard to shake them. And that's why it's difficult to argue with beliefs, because belief is something that is there because somebody decided they want to believe it. And when somebody says, I don't care what you say, I don't care what you show me, you can show them 325 AD when the Council of Nicaea took place and the ruler Constantine made Christianity the state religion. You can show them how the books that were edited and taken out of the Bible that spoke about reincarnation, that spoke about coming back and the power of God that exists in every human, and how Jesus was teaching that we all have this power within us because we're going to do greater things than he even did. You can tell people that and they say, I don't care about all of that. I don't want to read and study about that. You can tell people that the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which were apparently written by apostles, but we know were put together over the course of 150 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 150 years after Jesus is gone, you have these books being written that attribute words to him. And we just 50 years past Dr. Martin Luther King and people fighting over what he said. And so, and he wrote a lot of his own stuff. So can you imagine 150 years later, a pre-internet of Jesus having these teachings that were then taken over and canonized as scripture 150 years later, when you tell people that, they still say, you know what, I don't care. You can tell people that when religion started, when we talk about Christianity and the history of Christianity, you can tell people the truth. And that is, for the first 200, 300 years of Christianity, it was considered a cult. That's what it was. Traditional religion did not accept it. The traditional religion at the time was Judaism. And Jesus was a practicing member of Judaism. So he didn't stray except for reform. So when people started following his teachings as a separate religion, they were branded as a cult. But now, 2,000 years later, it's a foundation of a culture, right? So we see Christian culture, that concept of cult has expanded, and now we get to that space. I say that all to say that belief is fine. I don't argue much with people's beliefs, because when you argue beliefs, you get into some dangerous territory.
Yeah.
Always ask a question, though. How is this belief serving you? How is it producing fruit in your life? How is it helping you maintain family relationships, glowing health? How does it help you grow financially and doing the things that you were born to do? If those beliefs are helping you, then so be it. If they're not, consider adopting spiritual practices that will help you reach your goals and live a good life. And consider moving away from the religious nature, which tends to be a little bit more judgmental.
That's a great segue to my next question for you, because I feel like homosexuality gets such a bad rap, and not just Christianity, but in all religions. And I'm wondering, like what you just said, how does that belief help you at all? The answer is, if you're against homosexuality, that does nothing for you. Just let two other people be as happy as they want to be. I can't wrap my mind around why that is such a big deal, and not just Christianity, but in a lot of different religions.
Here's what we look at. We talk about homosexuality. And what's interesting is infinity is a space where it's written into the creed. We don't have a belief statement. We have an agreement statement. So our agreements are that we see who you are. We affirm you. So at infinity, we don't just tolerate people. Society teaches you tolerance. You know, in the workforce environment, you have tolerant behavior.
Right.
In politics, you tolerate people. But toleration is holding your nose, disliking somebody, and just dealing with them as best you can to minimize conflict. That will not work to build a beloved community. So we teach affirmation, and we practice affirmation. In other words, be who you truly are, and we embrace that. Be the best you, who you truly are, regardless of race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, socioeconomic background. We all make up beloved community. The concept of, you know, whether you're for or against people being able to love who they want to love and who they're oriented toward, that often comes from a space of insecurity with people. I found in the church, if I'm just be real with you, Dola White, I'll tell you the real understanding of things. I found in the church that the people who were most insecure about homosexuals, gay folks, whatever they wanted to call them, some of the pejorative terms that they would put out for people who were oriented toward the same gender, the people who were the loudest about that were people who had undercover stuff going on. And so they weren't really speaking out against somebody else. They were speaking out against themselves. And they were trying to convince themselves that this was wrong because they were having those urges themselves. I always told people, if you're against gay marriage, then don't marry a gay person.
Right. Exactly. It's pretty simple.
You're right. Because I mean, if you don't want to, if you're against gay marriage, then don't get married to a gay person. But who somebody marries, who marries who they choose to love, how they choose to build a community and family. That's the freedom of choice that we have. That's the freedom of manifestation that we have. And that is a gift because we're all made in the image and likeness of a creator, regardless of what we name. And again, the litmus test is, how are you producing fruit in your life? Are you happy? Are you whole? Are you feeling good about who you are? And are you feeling good about your spiritual path?
Speaking of spiritual paths, I guess let's get into your personal individual beliefs that, from what I understand with Infinity, you don't push that on people. That's the whole goal of Infinity. But what is it that you personally believe?
Personally, I don't believe much.
Okay.
A belief is what exists in the absence of provable fact. People used to ask me, to say, well, son, do you still believe in God? And I would throw them. I was like, no, I don't. They were like, what? When did you stop believing in God? I said, well, I look back over my life and I looked at times when I was in low places. I looked at times where the odds were stacked against me and I faced insurmountable odds to do things. I gave all I could and there was nothing else I could do. And yet there was a universal force where things aligned that took me over a hump, that aligned people, places, and things, the nouns that I needed in my life to do something that was insurmountable that I was incapable of doing by myself. So guess what? To me, that proved the existence of a higher being. So I don't believe God exists. I know God exists for me in my life through the spiritual practices that I can look back and say, here's the proof of that. So in Infinity, four concepts bring everybody together in that central scientific way. And that's what we call SNAP. You know, if you ever watch any of our streams, you know, everybody's always snapping like you're in a spoken word space. But SNAP is an acronym for spirituality, nurturing, action, and proof. So spirituality is connecting with the God of your personal acceptance and understanding. That can be through an affirmative prayer, speaking things into existence, meditation. It can be through yoga. It could be through conversations and reading about spirituality. All of those things connect you. The next thing you do when you connect is you nurture that energy. So that nurturing includes your mind. It includes your body. It includes nurturing your soul. We encourage healthy eating. We encourage exercise and making sure that you're taking care of your physical temple. When you get through spirituality and nurturing, the third step, which is takes people a while to get to, and that's action, because you have to do something with what you learn. It does no good for us to study the world's religions. It does no good for us to learn how to meditate until we can levitate from the ground. It does no good for us to open the sky and be able to have all of these wonderful visions, and then we don't do anything with it. So doing something is, in Infinity's case, building Nashville's first tiny house community for the homeless and donating it for free. Building the Infinity Center, which is where my office is now, where we have a youth program in the summer where we teach them performing arts, feeding the homeless, reaching out to people, teaching people how to be financially independent. And then when you do spirituality, nurturing, and action, in the end, you see the P, and that is proof. So I need to, again, that goes into the concept of, if you have proof, you don't have to believe anymore, because you should be able to look back over a period of time where you are adopting new personal spiritual practices and coming together in community and saying, you know what? I got over that fear I had of having that conversation that was difficult with my wife or my husband. I got through the struggles of being a parent. I got through breaking a cycle of addiction in my family. I use these spiritual lessons that I got on Sunday or our affirmation call. And now I can look at my life and say my life has been improved. And that's where you get this trajectory of success toward living in the right now, being aware of who you are and adopting spiritual practices as opposed to simply beliefs, because spiritual practices will show you fruit in your life. And that's what I'm concerned with. And that's what I love doing, providing people through Infinity with the opportunity to adopt spiritual practices that will produce fruit in their lives.
Let's talk about two things that are really hard for me for two different reasons. One is meditation. I try. My mind is always kind of turning if I'm awake. It's a weird thing because I can fall asleep like that in a matter of seconds.
Oh, okay.
And I can shut it off and I can go right to bed. But meditating, if I'm awake, it's hard for me to shut my mind off long enough to really sit there and not think about anything. Like, it's always what's next, what's next, what's next. I'm a naturally anxious person, something I'm working on. The other thing is yoga. Yoga, kind of the same thing for meditation with me, where it's kind of hard for me to focus, but I also have extreme scoliosis. scoliosis, which makes yoga a little more difficult physically, I think. I've only tried it once, so I'm probably talking a little bit out of my ass right now. But I went with my wife one time, and it was tough. But let's talk about those two things, because every spiritual person I know practices meditation and yoga.
Sure. Well, you know, one good starting part, it point with meditation is real simple. So take a deep breath in with me. Exhale, release. There you go. You just meditated.
Okay.
When we think of meditation, you know, we think of the yogi in the lotus position with the mudras and the different hand positions of yoga and the levitating off the ground and the aura of light. And we're like, I can never get there. You know, I can't get there. My mind's racing. And you know, you've got a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
That means your mind is always.
Yes.
Thinking about something, right? You're married with kids, you're thinking. My wife and I, we've got 5 kids. So I've got them from 26 all the way down to 9. So there's always something going on. But we think about transcendental meditation, which is trying to wipe the screen blank in our mind and get to that space where we can listen to just the voice that's inside. And that's one state. But there's also mindful meditation. And mindfulness is something that I encourage for people. And that is simply take 10 seconds out, take 20 seconds out of your day, and take a deep breath and exhale. There's no wrong way to meditate. I tell people this all the time. When we think of meditations, we set these high expectations. And when you set a goal that's too high that you can never accomplish, it kills the spirit. Whenever you feel a thought that's coming in that's distracting, instead of killing yourself and saying, there's that thought, I'm trying to meditate, it's messing with me. No, recognize the thought, see the thought, let it come into your consciousness. Don't judge it. Take a deep breath and then release it in the breath. Always turn the attention to the breath, because with the 600 muscles that we have in the body and the countless ligaments and the countless arteries that we have rolling through us, the wonderful complexity that we have inside us gives way to one simple thing. We really ain't that sharp. It's hard for us to do a couple of things at the same time. So if we have a lot of thoughts coming in and we turn it to the breath, it's really hard if we're focusing on just the breath to think about all of those other things. So we might be able to do that for a minute. We extend that then to 2 minutes. Then we extend it to a little further. So I say to anybody who's watching and anybody, including you, who might want to get into that, focus on the breath, even if it's saying every few minutes when all this stuff is swirling around me, I'm going to take a pause and I'm going to take 3 deep breaths and not think about anything but how the breath feels entering my lungs and how it feels exiting my body. That is the foundation of meditation. It starts there. Yoga, same way. My lovely wife never did yoga. She does power yoga with me now. And I invoke her because she too had scoliosis. And so that was difficult for her. Some of the twists. The word yoga, as it comes from the Hindu tradition of the Upanishads and how it's defined in the ancient Vedic scriptures, or how it's defined in a familiar book to many people, the Bhagavad Gita, yoga simply means yoke. It means stillness. So if you sit on the floor and cross your legs and simply place your hands at heart center and breathe, guess what? You're doing yoga. All of the additional poses that have been added and all of the hard work that people go into, and their gymnasts and former ballet dancers, all of that is added on to it. So start with simple things. And yoga is about understanding where your body is and moving according with the breath, according to and along with the breath. So it's simple. It's taking it slow. It's picking the right kind of teachers who can help you to make modifications. And for every single pose you do in yoga, there's some kind of modification. I'm a living example. I've been practicing yoga about 15 years now, and it's made a difference in my life. I was never a flexible guy. I'm 6'2". It was, you know, you had that little bit of yoga mat. I was like, man, how the tall brother supposed to fit on this stuff?
Right.
You know, I was like, man, I can't do all of this stuff. But I say that to say that a year and a half ago at 52, I went through and got my certification, my official certification as a yoga teacher. And it's something that I never thought I would get to in terms of practice. But just like with everything else, yoga is very incremental. You do what you do it, as your body tells you, and then you begin to build on it, and you'll be surprised where you're going. My favorite yoga teacher, a cat named Chris, who teaches at the downtown YMCA, he teaches Iyengar style, which is this really strict hold the pose kind of space. He started practicing yoga because he broke his back on a trampoline at his sister's wedding 15 years ago, almost 15 years ago. And they told him he'd never walk again. And he had no other choice other than to start doing yoga because he had chronic pain. And now he's one of the greatest yoga teachers in the region, man, and one of the most flexible guys ever. He runs, he does all kind of stuff because he utilized yoga as a practice to heal his body. So I recommend it. And I say, do what you can and don't think about the big beast. Just think about one small pose at a time, one breath at a time.
How does that make you, I don't know, better, more healed, a more peaceful spiritual person?
Sure. Well, anytime you stand still, you get peace. You know, it's the peace in church terms, they would say the peace that passes all understanding. Anytime there's a lot going on in the world around you, and we know we live in those times, it can cause anxiety, and it's everything, and has a stacking effect or a weathering effect. Many young people experience that weathering effect. It's the loud music going on here. It's the people fighting on the left. You click on the news, it's people arguing. You get on social media and you do the scroll thing, and everybody's complaining about something. All of this creates anxiety. Anxiety makes us breathe, and it makes us pant. It makes us short of breath. What's dangerous about the short breath is that panting breath is what's called canine breathing. And we see that with dogs. That's how dogs, right, and they're running there. In human beings, physiologically, canine breathing sends your levels of anxiety out of the roof, because what it does is it stimulates the adrenaline flow in your body. So the adrenaline flow then puts you into the fight, flight, or freeze reflex. So when you encounter something or somebody, you either want to fight them, you want to run from them, or you freeze in paralysis. And that's what anxiety does. The simple act of breathing oxygenates the blood. And what I love about what we do at Infinity is we have this marriage between the scientific and the spiritual. So they're not at odds. We bring them together. So somebody who comes to Infinity and says, hey, you know, I don't do the God stuff, I just do the science. And we say, well, great. Let's just do the science of it. Breathing brings oxygen into the lungs. It then oxygenates the blood. It then eases the tension. It then loosens the anxiety and dissipates the anxiety. When you breathe, when you take your time to do positions in yoga, when you take your time to meditate, then you're not dealing with reacting to the circumstances. When you have circumstances that come on you, you react negatively because you have to act on the spot. When you pause and breathe and take your time, then you are in a better position to interact with whatever is facing you. That's not just a physical tool. It's not just a physiological tool, but it is very much a spiritual tool. And when you talk about spiritual tools, you're talking about things that actually produce the fruit in your life and actually help you become a more evolved human being. I like Vine DeLorean Jr. was a great Native American First Nations spiritual leader. And they ask him about the difference between religion and spirituality. And I always use his definition because it's the best. He said, religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell. Spirituality is for people who already been there. So when you get to that point, you know, you say, look, I deal with enough. I just want to find a way to navigate this life in a better way and let that be good for right now. You find that you open yourself to be more spiritual and to be more powerful. So spiritual practices are I tell you, what is a spiritual practice? And I think that's a good way to define it. A spiritual practice is any practice that aligns you with God and or nature for better results. Whatever that spiritual practice is. Some people, believe it or not, some spiritual practices are video gaming. Sometimes a spiritual practice is I'm going out to sit on the back porch. Sometimes a spiritual practice is a walk on the greenway. Sometimes it's a long drive. Sometimes it's changing the channel on the radio. There are some stations that I turn on sometimes when I just want my head to bang. you know, I'm a 101 when I want to head to bang. I'm gonna go to some
other that.
Sometimes, and when I'm feeling like I need that testosterone energy, I'm going to the gym. You know, I'm gonna bang certain things in my headphones. But there are times when I feel like I need to come down or I need to think more, and I'm gonna change the station. The frequency when you talk about spiritual energy, one of the things that we talk about at Infinity a lot is the law of attraction. And the law of attraction is a universal law. It's like the law of gravity. When you talk about the law of attraction, you say that everything is vibration. So your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So wherever you are, you're going to attract those same kind of people, because the second point is like energy is attracted to like energy. That's why when you have people who walk in the room, who light up the room, who always are positive and uplifting, they tend to attract those people. People who always criticize, they're always negative, they're always tearing stuff down. They travel in posses too. And you can feel that energy coming off them. When you come in, you want to turn to the right and avoid them. But the third part of that, and that's where it's important for us to adopt spiritual practices. And the third part of the law of attraction is that you control the frequency of your vibration. So you get to control not what happens outside of you, but you definitely get to control how you interact and react to those things. So if somebody can present me with an opportunity to be negative, and I can go all in with them and find myself looking back and saying, man, what the hell was I thinking? Or I can say, one of my sayings is, I decline your invitation to a lower vibration. I've had to tell people that out loud. I've had to say it inside my mind. That is a spiritual practice as well. So spiritual practices include reading. I recommend that people read magazines and articles that mean something to them, that uplift them. And the reason why I want them to start out with reading magazines or newspaper articles or interesting stories is there is a brain process that happens in our frontal lobes when we accomplish things. It releases the same endorphins when we finish something that are released when we drink, we smoke weed, we do illicit drugs, whatever it is to tune out. Those same endorphins are released when we find closure. Some people say, well, a book is too long for me to read, but I can read an article. When you read that article all the way through and you complete it, you feel as if you've accomplished something. So pick things that you can start and finish, and then begin to release those endorphins there, then you'll stack that on. Some people start with a 5K run. Some people move all the way up to a marathon. Physical, emotional activities, even if they're conversations that allow you to have a start and a finish, that is one of the most important things that I recommend people do when they're starting to evolve and grow their sense of personal spirituality.
I wanted to ask you, is there such a thing as too much spirituality? Can you be addicted? Can you meditate too much? Can you do too much yoga? Can you get too involved in the spiritual space?
You know what? There are always people who go too far, you know, and there are sometimes you just go too far. I try to get a daily practice in yoga. And then if I teach a class or at Infinity, one Sunday a month, we do yoga Sunday. So we move all the chairs, and for the Sunday service, it is yoga for all levels. And we broadcast that now. So I do that. But there is a culture around spirituality. And then there is a cult like energy, same root word, that goes around spirituality. And if you're leaning toward the cult elements of it, then definitely you can kind of go too far. And usually when I see people go too far, they're going too far with the external work and not far enough with the internal work. So they've got the designer yoga outfits. They got the perfect mats. They got the, you know, perfect clothes. They got all of the practices. They got all of the flexibility. They're doing all that wonderful stuff. And yet they can't maintain a decent relationship. So what good is all that flexibility and all of that breathing doing if nobody wants to have a conversation with
you? I ask that because there's damn sure people that have gone too far, in my opinion, with religion, just typical religion, right? Like, I mean, there's...
Oh, yeah, religion.
I just want to say, like, I haven't met anybody in the spiritual space that's been that. That's why I asked. But I've met plenty of people, you know, throughout life that were so religious. They would bring it into every conversation.
Yes.
Shut up. Trying to watch a football game here. This has nothing to do with God. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, you have to understand it. One of the component parts, one of the actually foundational parts of being religious is to propagate the religion. So it's about proselytizing, evangelizing, recruiting. It's a huge thing. You have to be, as a true believer, somebody who convinces everybody else that they're wrong. So it creates a space of zealot energy that is designed to actually propagate the religion. Tony Browder talks about in the Browder file, the word religion itself, religio from religare, means back or again, to do or to repeat, religion from legare or religare, to bind or to fasten. So religion itself is a system that binds or fastens you back to something which is perceived to be lost, which in a religious sense is a relationship with God. So how do we do this? We create all of these rules. And if you create this checklist and you're a good Christian, you're a good Muslim, you're a good Buddhist, whatever it might be, if you create this checklist and you invite others to do this checklist with you, then you will be saved. You will be bound back to something that has been lost. Reality, though, dictates it differently. And what I've come to know in truth is that there's never a space where the God of your personal acceptance and understanding, my personal acceptance and understanding, is missing, right? Because if God is in all and is seen as all and is part of all, then that means God is a presence. The opposite of presence is absence. So you can't have both, because scientifically, two objects can't occupy the same space at the same time. If you're saying you're serving a presence, a divine presence, then there is no absence. So there's really no need to create some way to force people to try to seek and find something that's external. That energy is internal. And that's what a lot of young people are discovering today when they're moving toward the space of spirituality. They're saying, I know for myself that I feel this presence. I may not be able to put a name on it. I may not be able to assign a culture to it. But I know I got up this morning. I know I'm breathing. I know that there was an instinct in me that told me not to turn right there. And I got a block down and there was an accident. And I'm grateful for that. I know there was something that told me when my kid is nagging me about, you know, reading something to them or spending a little extra time on the computer. There's something about me that said, stop what you're doing and pay a little attention to them, because you only got this little time and then they're going to be grown. And when they get grown, if they didn't get some of that lap time with you, it's going to cause problems in their relationship. That spirit speaking in that moment. And it doesn't have to do with how many scriptures you can memorize, how many books you can throw at people. It comes down to, can you dare to seek and find the answers on your own? And then if you need help, find the communities that help and affirm who you are. And that's how everybody rises, because, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. I say that with people. I left traditional spaces because it was difficult, man. I was a struggling young artist, man. I was pouring in money and pouring in time, and the people at the top were doing very well. They were balling out. But, you know, me and the other folks, we were like, man, this ain't working yet for us. How do we get this? I told you, you told me to be happy and trust and plant a seed, but it's not working. But I love a space like Infinity that has entrepreneurs and artists and creatives and attorneys and doctors and all kind of creative folks who say, how can we get spiritual practices that's going to make it so that we all live the best life possible? And so I get excited when a ton of people around Infinity are doing, on paper, much better than me, but also in a space where everybody's working together to live their best dreams and to be the most authentic person they can be.
And I think there's something also to be said when you grow up with religion, it's do this good deed so you don't go to hell.
Yeah.
Whereas what I think when you guys get out and you do community outreach things, it's, we're doing this because it's the right thing to do, not because we fear a consequence of it. And I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Yeah. And you have like your life being afraid of punishment.
Is there anything else we need to cover? Is some messages you want to get out? What you got?
Yeah, man, hey, thank you for just the conversation. It's good to have a free conversation. And it's a conversation that I've had with many people as individuals. I have it every Sunday at Infinity with people. And now with Infinity, it's fascinating because of COVID. With COVID, we've moved a lot online. And online, for a church environment, a traditional church environment, has become a little more difficult because there's so much interaction. Whereas with Infinity, the conversation between people, it's actually helped us meet so many people that we never would have met before. So at Infinity, we got people calling in and now interacting with us from Belgium and London and North Carolina and California and the islands, who say, you know what, I've been looking for a space like this. I don't find it in my city, but I find it here online on Sundays. And that interactive space is very, very powerful, because all people want is to be seen and to be seen for who they really truly are, as an authentic being who don't show up to a space to have a spiritual experience, but recognize that they are already spirits who are simply navigating the human experience like the rest of us. And if we can come to a space where we understand that, that's why young people, that's why outside the box thinkers always move to that space of spirituality. The beauty of and the gift of and sometimes the challenge of a space like Infinity Fellowship is when you're dealing with free thinking people, you want to provide them with support and spiritual practices, but they're free thinking people. And so people are going to come, people are going to come and go. And when people come for a reason, for a season or for a lifetime, I celebrate that. Because I tell people, and this is where spirituality differs from religion. In spirituality, we recognize that we're responsible for our spiritual growth and development, ultimately. I can provide you with tons of great spiritual practices. I can give you great books. But guess what? I can't live your life for you. As Dr. Barbara King said, I can speak something into existence with you, but I can't speak anything into existence for you, because you have to be willing to practice and do the work. When I was in traditional environment, it was a lot simpler. It was, hey, here's God. God's the shepherd. The pastor is the under shepherd. I am the sheep. And when I was in religious leadership then, that's how preachers talk behind the scenes. They like, man, we got to make sure the flock, you know, the flock is doing what it needs to do. The flock is, you know, being where it's supposed to be. And, you know, they got to make sure that they follow the shepherd. And it always bothered me, because I'm like, I'm not a sheep. I'm a human being. Sheep don't think. And again, believing is about being the sheep. And some people are fine with being the sheep. I don't judge you. If you want to be a sheep, be the sheep. But in this spiritual space and the spiritual spaces I teach from, I ask the question, are you willing to not be a sheep? Are you willing to take control of your own spiritual practices? Are you willing to then be a part of people along the journey who are there to support you? And are you willing to be okay with being yourself? That's what ultimately prayer and meditation is all about. I was a kid. We thought walkie-talkies were the greatest thing. It was this one kid, man. He was unique. And we used to hate when he got a walkie-talkie, because this kid would press in the talk button and it would get stuck in the lock position. Finally, he got that you got to talk and then you release. Prayer is when we talk. Meditation is when we release. So a lot of people don't get the benefit of receiving spiritual guidance that comes from that inner voice, because we are always pressing the talk button. And we press the talk button for stuff that doesn't make sense. Oh, I need the light bill. I got to know the family's going crazy. Oh, everything. It's great. But when you're constantly talking and having to press the button down, when are you ever going to receive energy and inspiration from a being that you say in a religious sense is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, can see all, does all, and can do all? I mean, just is all present in everything. Don't you think God knows that, you know, you got to pay your light bill? I mean, don't you think that, I mean, you already know. So a lot of that is for us. But when you reach a point where you're connected, you begin to see how all things fit together. When you see how all things fit together, you see how you are a part and how we are all a part of that same creation. So call it whatever you want to call it. You also have a responsibility as an individual to love yourself and to be okay with who you are and where you are. When you start from that space, you're able to not only see yourself as authentic, but you're able to see the authenticity in other people. And that's how you heal relationships, and that's how you grow.
Reverend Jeff of Bobby McCarr, thank you so much for being my guest. Where can they find you? Infinity Fellowship. Obviously, you can Google it, but give us the website where they can find you. I'm sure, like you said, the internet space is working out for you, because you don't say you've got to come into this building every Sunday. If not, you're going to hell. You have a different approach. So I'm sure.
When people come into the building, they don't ever want to leave. You know, we have a former house that we turned into a center, and, you know, we got hardwood floors, got 5 acres in the back, and people can walk on the trails. It's a great space, and people just need to get away anyway. And we're looking forward to when we come back and we can see people in person. But if you want to look us up, you can look us up on the internet at myif.org. That's M-Y-I-F, My Infinity Fellowship, .org. You can find me on social media, on Instagram and on Twitter at the Rev Jock, J-O-C, Jeff Obafemi Carr. So at the Rev Jock, and you can find us at Infinity Fellowship on Instagram. And of course, on YouTube, we stream at the Infinity Fellowship, and Facebook, we stream at the Infinity Fellowship. And between all of that, man, we'll find a way to be there for everybody we can be there for.
I want to say thank you again to my guest, the Reverend Jeff Obafemi Carr, the founder and chief spiritual officer of the Infinity Fellowship. That's it for me for the entire year. Be back in 2021 with brand new episodes. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Clubhouse. All three are the same. At DolaWhite101, D-O-L-E-W-I-T-E 101. And make sure you hit that subscribe button and download all the new podcasts automatically. Thank you for checking me out. Be back in 2021.